Hi, folks, and thank you for listening to this SearchSAP.com podcast. I'm Courtney Bjorlin, news editor on the site. Today, we're speaking with Ron Wintz, who is CEO of Guidon, a Lean Six Sigma consulting firm based in Mesa, Arizona. Guidon works with companies in every sector, including manufacturing and healthcare, but today we'll be focusing on applying lean principles in the public sector. Ron has worked with many governments, including the states of Iowa, Vermont, and Wyoming, and has even done some work with the U.S. Department of Defense. If we could just start out, Ron, by sort of introducing yourself and tell me a little bit about what Guidon does.
My name's Ron Wintz. I'm the one of the founders and the president of Guidon Performance Solutions. We focus on business performance improvement, but we use a toolbox from Toyota and some of the Six Sigma tools that were created at Motorola in the service sector. And one of our large client bases is in the government or public sector space, primarily working with agencies within state and local governments, but we also work with pension benefit guarantee and the U.S. EPA. And have done a little bit of work with the Department of Defense on process improvement and business or performance improvement and application of the Toyota Production System and things in that sector.
Well, if you could start by sort of giving our listeners an overview of what Lean Six Sigma really means and what are some of the big benefits to adopting this approach.
Lean Six Sigma, for all of the rhetoric that you hear out there, is really a fundamental way of improving the services that you offer to your customers. And essentially, the way that the founding group, you know, the Toyotas and the GEs and the Motorolas of the world that started using these tools back in manufacturing, essentially what they were looking at is how do we take all of the things that don't add value from a customer's perspective and take those out of the equation and focus, if we could, on completely having a process that delivers nothing but value. And all of that stuff that they take out is just waste. The Six Sigma dimension of that brings to the table the variation that happens, which would be anything that falls outside of the expectations of the customer. So an example might be if you go to different hotels, you might have a different experience each time, even though it's the same brand owned by the same company. You might have a different experience at each different hotel. And the idea is, how do we make that experience for the customer consistent and repeatable, and our process is capable of delivering that? The two together allow you to get rid of the waste and at the same time create a repeatable and positive experience for the customer. By doing that, you can take a lot of waste out of the process and make it efficient and lean and cost effective. So in a nutshell, you can have double digit improvements in productivity and quality and cycle time reduction, and at the same time be improving the customer's experience.
I would gather that those are some of the business drivers for implementing this type of an approach.
You know, the business drivers vary from place to place. If you talk to some of our clients in this particular space, they might have been doing Lean or Six Sigma for a while, and now they're trying to find a way to accelerate it because it does give some pretty significant financial benefits. So what they're trying to do now is, how do we use this in our current environment to streamline our processes faster and make us more efficient so that we can continue to be successful in a tough economy? And the other side of that is, how do we take the same idea of waste and variability and focus on stuff like, how do we develop new products or services? How do we deploy information technology faster? How do we do it without the amount of capital that we normally would have in the past? In the government side, it's really trying to improve the service levels, but also with their declining budgets and with the shortfalls they're having, they're kind of focused on a lot of the, how do we get the same level of service or improved level of service with the same resources, or in some cases with less, because as you know, there's a lot of retirements that are happening these days in the government space, and so they don't want to necessarily have to add headcount, but they'd like to improve their services. So the idea around government has been a lot of, how do we do more with less?
What are some of the first steps governments are taking to adopt a lean approach?
The vast majority of them are looking at a particular problem or a particular area that might have some benefit. For example, if you go back to where the state of Iowa started, and they've probably been at it about as long or longer than anyone that is a state government on kind of a broader scale. Essentially, they started out with a business community going to the legislature and communicating it through their what they call their Iowa Business Council. And they basically said, you know, these are tools that we're using that are working for us. And right now, we're having difficulty growing in the environment that we'd like to. So we'd like to open plants. We'd like to grow the businesses we have, but some of the regulatory things and the processes we have to go through to get permission to open a plant or to get an air permit, but at the same time also make sure that we protect the environment, to slow down our processes to 9 to 12 months. And so they started out with a particular business need that would support both the growth of the private sector, but also make the public sector more efficient. And that collaborative basically decided to focus on air permits, and they picked a particular process, and they were able to cut that down from months down to weeks. And so that typically is how most of our government clients are really getting started. They're picking a particular focus area where they need to improve that can be advantageous both for the customer side, the constituent side, but also can have some advantage for the government agency itself around how they're going to more appropriately meet their budget challenges, how are they going to do more with less. And so those are typically where they're starting. So US EPA started out with a lot of the same kind of things. How do we do audits faster? How do we do things faster, but at the same time keep the accuracy and the value-added pieces of that process in place? And that's a lot of the things that are happening right now. Most of the government agencies have kind of started out on the environmental side and started to work on a lot of the permitting processes. So how do we streamline the process so we can still have a very accurate process and make sure that we meet all the environmental needs that we have, but take the waste out so that it doesn't just consume resources and money?
How can IT help them adopt this approach? And then do they need to have a specific technology foundation to begin with, or is it the type of thing where you can sort of go in and then select the technology as you go?
Well, there's actually a couple of different dimensions of where technology plays. One of the things that we always say is if you don't have technology in place today, you should take a look at the process first before you put technology in place. And a big reason for that is the tendency is to say that technology can be a silver bullet and make us more efficient, and that's true. But what happens is we spend a lot of capital to deploy technology to automate things that don't need to be done at all because they're wasteful. So if you haven't deployed technology yet, ideally what you'll do is take a look at the processes and apply some of the Lean and Six Sigma tools first, then automate the process, and you get a significantly improved benefit from that. The second piece of that, which is what role can technology play if it's already in place? The nice thing about having a service environment where technology is more a part of the process versus a supporter for the process is that you can capture a lot of data. It's often hard for service organizations to figure out what actually is happening in a process where it's not happening in a factory and you can see the transformation of a car from raw material to a finished unit as it rolls off the assembly line. You don't have that advantage in the government space. So the technology can actually be leveraged for data mining. You can make a process more visible because you can see where the queues are, you can see where the breakdowns are, you can track volumes and the amount of time that went into things. So a lot of that data can come out of some of the technology if it's already in place that allows you to accelerate the application of tools because you can figure out what's actually happening in the process. And then the third piece of that we tend to talk about is if you leverage the technology correctly, it can actually be a great tool for sustaining the improved process because the technology, if it's created to mirror a lean and repeatable process, then it can serve almost as a workflow manager because it'll kind of force you to go follow a particular process that is built into the software versus having to do a lot of workarounds and that kind of stuff, which actually add waste to the systems.
Are there ways that you see governments use it improperly to sort of, I read a lot about people who think they're lean or they think they're practicing lean principles because they have technology in place, but that's not necessarily the case, right?
No, as you know, and actually to be honest, they are leaner from a standpoint of the fact that they've actually accelerated things that are happening, but they've left the waste in the system. So there's no question you can make some mistakes along the way if you just automate bad processes. It doesn't mean the process is any better. And more often than not, what we find is when you do that, you actually spend anywhere from, 20% to 50% more money automating that process. And then the other piece of it is, this is the part that you really can't capture when you think you're lean and you're really not. A lot of times the people who actually have to work in the technology or work with the technology have to develop workarounds to make the technology work the way that they want it to. So that actually adds additional cost and waste to the system. So there's no question that it can be a double-edged sword. You can go the wrong way with technology if you become over-reliant on it. And a lot of what we always talk about is make sure that when you're looking at technology and you're looking at even the application of Lean and Six Sigma, is that you have to get the people in the bowels of the organization who actually work the process involved, not necessarily, you know, the manager level, but the people that actually do the work. And they'll tell you where those skeletons are and where the issues are and where the waste is before you actually go and spend money and capital on the waste and, you know, the application of some of these tools.
So it's really important, it's sort of the same principles as when you're going to embark on a big ERP project or something like that. You really have to get your processes in check and know exactly what you want to get out of this particular project.
Absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing about when several of the companies we work with, when they start heading down the road of putting in an SAP system or some other type of system, often what they find is that Lean and Six Sigma actually help them accelerate the process because they already have a toolbox to help them accurately depict what the process is today, which is one of the first pieces of putting in an ERP system. And the other piece of it is it allows them to lean the process out in parallel as they're developing the new technology. So they can actually take capital off the table and actually come in under budget in less than half the time for the same process that had they not used that toolbox, what they would have ended up with.
So tell me why you think some of these lean projects fail.
The biggest thing that we run into is the leadership aspect of it. There's always a change management aspect of anything you do, whether you're putting in a new ERP system or whether you're adopting Lean and Six Sigma. That change management piece has to involve and be led by the leadership of the organization. And a lot of times, sometimes the leadership tries to delegate the activity, whether you know it be this ERP system or whether it's Lean and Six Sigma. A lot of times they look at it as maybe a silver bullet. A lot of times maybe they look at it as just something that is a nice little to-do, or maybe they're trying to do it because they'd like it to be on their, you know, press release or in their investor communications or something like that. And a lot of times what happens is the process actually fails because of the lack of attention from leadership. So, and as you know, change management's all around control. So anytime you start to challenge span of control and move decision-making down, which Lean advocates moving decision-making down to the lowest level possible and empowering the people that actually do the work to have ownership and accountability for what they're doing and look for opportunities for waste. When you take that and you move that down in the organization, a lot of the people that are used to having control of the situation become uncomfortable with that. So that change management of that aspect.
So to sort of sum up, why do you think it's important for customers to be embarking on these types of projects in this economy?
You know, what we're finding with our client base today is that they're able to be more agile in an environment that's very difficult to predict. The idea of creating lean and agile and repeatable processes that can react to a business environment faster are hugely important for where we're going to go, I think, in the next couple of years, because I think nobody can really predict what the recession is going to look like at the end and when we're going to recover. So we have to be able to quickly react to that environment. So that's one. The other piece of it is you have to be customer-centric in order to do Lean and Six Sigma. You have to truly understand what the voice of the customer is, and you have to look at your processes from outside in. By doing that and adopting that, you can generate significant customer loyalty very quickly. A lot of our retail clients are having a lot of success with that today, where they're building loyalty with customers, and customers aren't spending today. So the ones that are spending, if they go back to and they're loyal to a particular space, that environment might actually, or that retailer might actually be very successful or at least survive the downturn more effectively than some of their competition. So you can actually have a pretty dramatic impact on the way that your customer views your business very quickly, and that's important, you know, when you're trying to keep the volume of sales and those types of things up. And the last piece of it is a lot of our clients are able to free up significant working capital in a pretty tight credit market.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for that. That'll be great for our listeners, and I'm sure they'll benefit from that.
Well, we certainly hope so, especially, you know, we're taxpayers as well. So we're hopeful that a lot of this will begin to gain traction now that people are kind of under duress and they have to do something different than they've done before. We're hopeful that they'll turn to a pretty common sense approach and have some success with it.
Thank you for listening to this SearchSAP.com podcast. Please continue to turn to SearchSAP.com for all your SAP news.